Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
And how's it going out there, Leafs Nation? We're about a week away since, or just over a week, I guess, since, losing yet another playoff or qualifying round series. And so we've taken the time off to basically take a deep breath. And before we get into things, though, we just want to give our condolences to the Howardchuk family, Dale Howardchuk, Hockey Hall of Famer, who passed away earlier this week, sadly, from cancer. And he played for the Winnipeg Jets for 9 seasons, Buffalo Sabres for 5 seasons. And we just want the family to know thoughts and prayers are with them. And rest in peace, Dale Howardchuk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was actually the coach of the Barrie Colts as well in the OHL. And so that team is, I'm sure, mourning his loss as well as the larger, greater hockey family there. And he also was pivotal in our Canada Cup win in 1987. Lots of interesting stories about that, you know, this week, a little bit more insight. And it's very, very sad.
It's great that they're doing the statue outside of the Winnipeg Arena, that I don't know what it's called, but they're going to do a statue. And and they also, just as the memorial right now, they have the, they took his banner from inside and they put it outside. Mm-hmm. And they have a big picture of him outside the arena, and fans are going to pay their respects, that sort of thing. So that's it's a nice thing.
It's interesting because any other era, you know, he would have been, you know, much more celebrated. It's just he was always sort of in Gretzky and Lemieux's shadow, but really every bit is as great a player as those guys, right? So very underrated. And it's a sad time. So.
And the NHL did a nice job anyways. They did a, moment of silence before the games, mm-hmm. of the playoff games. And he'll definitely be missed. A real, even on I think it's Svechnikov, the guy on Carolina. There's a few young mm-hmm. players that they played on. Shifley too would have known him. I think Mark Shifley, I think, played with, I don't know if Howardchuk was coaching Barrie at the time, but he played for Barrie mm-hmm. Colts as well. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the younger players that are current NHLers, they know him. And it's sad. He's going to be missed. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And but like we said, we took the week off basically to mm-hmm. Kind of take a deep breath. I'm still taking a deep breath myself. I think it's because I heard PJ Stock before we came on this podcast.
Well, that's a mistake.
Yeah, I know. So that was a mistake to listen to him. But anyways,
So what we decided to do for this episode is we're going to kind of take a little bit of a deep dive into deconstructing the season now and, you know, how we see things and, you know, having this week to kind of have a little distance from the playoff qualifier, give our grades of basically the players. And so we broke it down into our grades for the core four, our forwards, defense, and then goal, and then also grading management, Shanahan, Dubas, and Keefe. And we're going to just kind of wrap things up and do a little bit of review of what we have to look forward to moving in towards next season. So without any further ado, let's get on with the show.
All right, so let's get into it here with this is for the regular season again, sort of thing, right? So, because Syl yelled at me because I actually did a some notes for this show that were more based on what had happened with the playoffs. So
yell? Anyway. Yell over text, by the way. I don't know.
But this is the regular season, and I still think we're probably gonna not agree. But anyways, let's get to it here. We're starting off with the core four. We kind of split them out, or we decided to split them out from the regular forwards, because everyone that's just the way everyone looks at them as well as a core four. So I gave them a B+. And I gave them the B+ because I guess it's their fourth season, obviously, with the three young guys anyways. And Tavares has been there for the 2 years out of the four. No problem with Austin Matthews. He's constantly improving. He's showing the consistent improvement every year. He had career high goals, points. It helped that he was healthy all season too. Finally, I was like, actually going into the season, I think we were both concerned that who knows, like you never know, yeah. He might get something again that would hinder, because he probably would have got 50 goals the previous season. Sorry, like if he was healthy, but there is always something that happened, one or two things, right? So with him, and obviously, I even looked up, I guess, he had 47 goals, so unfortunately, he didn't break Rick Vive's record of the 54 goals, but 35 goals of those 47 were at even strength, which is really impressive.
He was a 5-on-5 master, really.
And he had the most points on the team with 80 points, and his defensive game is really improving. Like, he's really becoming like a two-way center, basically, in the league. Nylander, I think Nylander is the one that kind of brought it down a little bit, to go to a B+ and not get an A. I just think he has more to give. He's the guy that, yes, he had 31 goals. Yes, career high best, 31 goals. But the guy, I don't know if it's, I've talked about this before, about his, and everybody talks about his, not his personality, but just the way he shows himself. He doesn't give it all every night. And I think that's what everybody is frustrated about. And I just remember him from his rookie season and that playoff that against Washington. And the guy, you could not take the puck off of his stick. He was just going around the offensive zone, totally in control. I know that nobody knew, like they were new to the league, obviously, as rookies. But I just think as he has grown, let's say 3 seasons later, I just think that he can do more on a consistent basis. But he had a good season. He ended with 59 points, and previously he had 61 points as his best. So he definitely probably would have beaten that, I think, right? So he definitely put up the points, but it's just that little extra that I think that he can give us that he doesn't give us on a nightly basis. And then Mitch, everybody wants to get rid of him right now for whatever reason. I don't know why. I'm fine with him. I think we've talked about it before, Syl, with the whole contract thing, that I just think, I actually heard last week that a few people have been saying that it's the people around him, like his friends and family and stuff, that are kind of making it seem like everybody is against him or should be against him somehow. The negativity is coming from a lot of people here.
And I mean, they're all Leaf fans too. So they're all going to have opinions. And the other thing is too, is that often the people who you feel should be protecting you, sometimes they kind of cut you down. So,
yeah.
You know, sometimes support from the people closest to you is not where you really get your support. Yeah. So,
I mean, he was injured too. That's the other thing that it was a high ankle sprain, which is hard to come back from, obviously. And considering
he came back earlier.
Yeah. And he came back
really scheduled. So,
yeah. And he was on pace to match his previous season high of points of 94, even considering he had 67 points in 59 games. So he's over point a game player. So I don't know. I just don't know how people are just not wanting him on this team sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, you could probably, if it had a choice between Marner and Nylander, like, yes, you probably would get more for Marner, but I think I'll get into this a little bit more with the mark on Dubas, but I wouldn't trust Dubas to make a deal like that. Sorry, but not right now. Okay, and then moving on to Tavares, I just think that he was hurt all year, practically. He wasn't 100% all year. I mean, he's a veteran. Obviously, he's our leader, the captain, and you can't, like John Tavares, you can never say that he's not giving his full 100% every game. And so, I mean, he had 60 points, 63 games. And he's basically the only guy, even though I think he was injured most of the year, that he's the only guy that would go into the dirty areas in front of the net, below the faceoff dots, like being like digging in, as Mike Babcock used to say. He was always digging in. So I had no problem with him. So, yeah, so I just think that I was hoping the B plus really too was because I was hoping that at least if not one of them, two of them together could get together to get us over the top in this fourth season to actually win a round, like to win a series. I just thought that, I mean, there's four of them. So out of those four, even if it was two of them could get together and just take that team and get them over the hump to win a series. And I understand it's COVID times and all that crap. Yeah, it just didn't happen. So I gave them B+. What was your mark after all that?
Okay. Well, it's fairly close. I gave them an A-. And I actually sort of even did the math on this with my grades. It averaged out to an A-. So, I gave Matthews an A+ because really, like, there's nothing more to say about him and his effort and his game. One thing you didn't mention is how much he's improved in the faceoff circle. And you could see that there's so much trust in him there too, because even during that qualifier, they let him take a defensive zone faceoff there, which, you know, that's something that normally he wasn't doing as much. And also on a defensive zone penalty killing faceoff. So that kind of shows how much his skill level has improved there. Nylander, this is where we're kind of a little bit different. I actually gave him an A. I think you might be having a bit of a hangover from just the wafts of Nylander from the qualifier. Mm-hmm. I actually think that he was much more consistent during the regular season this year. I didn't see as much on and off nights that we have in the past, and it was evidenced by his game. And like you could count on him, you know, whether he was playing on the top line or the second line with JT, he was creating, the puck was finding him. I actually gave him an A, because I think that he really delivered this year. But he had disappointing playoffs, so I think there's a little bit of a hangover there with, you know, when you think about him, because the playoffs those were all of the things that kind of were knocks against him sort of kind of reemerged during that time. Tavares, I actually gave him a B, and I'm not sure that he was, I know he did hurt his finger and stuff. I don't see or know that there's any evidence of him being hurt all season. That's kind of something that we like to say when we really don't want to mark the guy down and we want to give him an excuse. Maybe I think that there is maybe some adjustment with having the C on his back. He had probably the lowest production year that he's had in a while. I think there were some adjustment issues there for him. And so, but you know what? The guy is very consistent still. So his off year is not really that off. And,
he's 29, right? From what I remember, I think he's 29 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I don't really see that there's a drop off, but every guy is going to have years where they're just not. And there's just a lot that happened for him in the offseason. Okay, so he has a new baby. you know, talking about Mitch, like you said, about, you know, things that are potentially outside of the rink, that, you know, being from the area, I wouldn't see that there maybe is pressure on him to, like, from people that are in his inner circle, in different ways, like in maybe even family ways, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that there, he had a lot to adjust to in this year, and you're a human being, stuff is going to affect you. So, you know, that's why I kind of graded him a little bit lower, but I don't expect that to stay the same. Mitch, I gave him a B+. He so much as admitted that the weight of the contract was on him. I really hope he doesn't turn into like a Brian McCabe situation where he just never gets over that. I think he will. I just didn't see in him the joy he normally plays with. There was only one game, that first game against Carolina, with where it was the, whichmacallit,
the generation game or whatever it is.
Yeah,
generation
game.
Like, that's say last generation.
Yeah, the next gen game. Yeah, that's the only game that really stood out to me when I think about watching him play with the normal joy that we're used to seeing him play with. There just seemed to be a lot of weight on him this year. So hopefully some time away he can, and it could be that, like you said, like if he's getting pressure or just not the kind of support he really needs outside of, you know, his Leaf family, there's stuff that's what I saw, is that things weighed on him pretty heavily. Yeah. With that in mind, though, his points production was still there, even though it seemed like it was just a little bit like going through mud to try to get it. So that just tells you that thinking of getting rid of him is a huge mistake, because the guy, even having a tough year, down year, still produces, not with the flash that we normally are used to seeing, maybe.
And he's only 23. He's 23 years old.
All of these guys, except for Tavares. Exactly. So really, you don't give up on people like that, because if you want to, you know, make comparison in the what we're looking at right now with Nathan MacKinnon, okay, he's 2 years older than these guys. Okay.
Yeah.
And both these guys, especially Matthews and Marner, have better numbers leading up in their first 4 years than Nathan MacKinnon did. So, like, they're obviously all different players, and that's a whole other show. So I'm not going to get into it. But the point is that these guys are just growing into themselves, and they've got to make the adjustment, and I believe they will. So overall, I was like really happy with the core four. Yes, it's just like just gutting that they couldn't do it this year to pull us over the edge, two of them together, like you said.
Yeah.
But you know what? That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen.
No.
It just didn't happen this year.
And that's, I guess, where that Jake Muzzin quote where he was saying the fire has to burn a little bit more in order to
win. You know what makes the fire burn? Losing. Ooh. Being embarrassed. Well, you know, going out like this, like that makes it burn. And the truth of the matter is that they are, I don't know what can make you more pissed than being on the precipice, being right there and not getting over the line. Because other teams, you know, have not pushed the teams that we've lost against to the brink like we have. So, like, it's so close you can taste it, and they just need to want.
Well, that's what. And not to get off topic here, but Shanahan said that in his press conference with the playoffs, like it's a. They have to learn they can't always leave it to be an elimination game. Like, to be in that spot, to be in an elimination game, that's part of learning, is to, you need to finish the job quicker than, like, because they're always going to a game 7 or a game 5, right?
So, right. And I guess that's the curse of always of I mean, they have this strong self-belief. So they have this belief that they always can come back, and they often do. They bounce back quickly. They generally do that.
But you don't want to do that, really.
If you can
avoid it.
Eventually you run out of rope. And so
that's the mindset, basically. Like, that's the mindset that they talk about. But So we were almost close there. I guess I had the B plus, you had the A minus. So that's good. And with
that Tavares, that is an A.
With Tavares, I just think too, from last summer, he had that, whatever it was. I think it was
abdominal injury.
Yeah. And I think it was, he said it was good going into the season, but I think that maybe something during the season didn't go right. Cause he didn't say it loudly or whatever to use it as an excuse, but he mentioned that he wasn't feeling great for most of the season. But yeah, well, like you said, it won't be.
There's lots of things that can make you not feel good. One thing could be not having good rest because you have a new baby. Yeah. Also makes you not feel good. Yeah. So it might not necessarily have to be an injury. Just could be not being able to have the same habits that he's used to having. So
yeah, or maybe losing to a Zamboni driver.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh my God. All right. So let's move on to the forwards, to the rest of the forwards.
Yeah.
And this is the part that, I mean, I don't know. I thought we were good with the secondary scoring, but it was definitely, I gave them a C minus on the rest of the group. The only person that gets an A in this group that I think is Zach Hyman. Mm-hmm. I didn't write it down. I think it's 220 goal seasons in a row now. I don't know if it was two or three. I forget. But again, he's like the way you were saying Nylander wasn't great in the playoffs, but Hyman maybe wasn't as noticeable in the playoffs either. But overall, I think he gives it his all every shift. Like, you're not going to find a harder worker guy than Zach Hyman going into those tough areas. And a lot of the other players in that group, in this group of forwards, the secondary scoring group, they don't even come close to what Zach Hyman does, in my opinion. Kapanen, for me, was a big disappointment during the regular season. I mean, I don't know what happened to him. And I was thinking, I think you mentioned it to me off the show at some point, he said maybe he needs a talking to by Shanahan, like the way he had with Kadri, because it just, I don't know. I think he's maybe having too much of a good time off the ice. I have no idea. But because he has so much potential with the speed factor, and he just didn't have it this year for me. Kerfoot was okay. But for me, I'm always comparing him to what we had in Kadri as a third line center. We won't even go to Nazem Kadri. I actually did have something written down.
Don't do it.
Right. But it's in the back. Oh God. Anyways. Okay. I'm moving on. So
I know that's so hard for you.
Yes, it is very difficult.
So I give you a lot of credit. You got props for that.
And then Mikheyev and Janssen were both injured for the majority of the season, so I'm not sure if it's fair to give them a grade at all. And I just found it odd how Mikheyev was like in the, what was it, the training camp for this playoff. Like, he was like listed as like the MVP of the training camp. And then the guy was invisible. Like, you didn't even know he was there, right? So we really could have used something from him. Again, that's for the playoffs, but during the regular season, he was playing so good up until that injury in December. And I just hope he can come back to being that player again, like with the regular season. And then we have Pierre Engvall, who again was nothing special after he signed that contract in February. I don't know what happened to him again, but yeah, like he didn't have it for me. Again, he's good on the penalty kill, but I mean, we're paying him over 1.5 million or something, 1.6 million for for like, I don't know, right now it's like he's a fourth line player. And then there's the two guys that I actually would give also, let's say, close to an A. Well, especially the one is Jason Spezza. I thought he did a great, fantastic job for us during the year. And then Kyle Clifford came in later on at the trade deadline, and they did what they were supposed to do. And being veterans, and Clifford's won the cup. And I don't think, personally, sounds as though Clifford won't be back because he is a UFA, and we don't have any money to get him back. But we need. I hope we get Spezza back at least. Like, we need, this group of players needs more leadership, I think. And yeah, so I gave them a C minus, and a lot, I guess it's hard to mark them because half of them were injured with pretty serious injuries, of the key guys anyways, like Mikheyev and Janssen were supposed to be playing key roles on this team going into the season. And then Kapanen, I don't know what happened to him. So everything, like, he just wasn't there. So, yeah. And that's it.
Okay, so for me, again, we're pretty close. So, like, actually, I gave them a C+. So, again, I'm obviously, you're the pessimist and I'm the optimist in this duo
plus
here.
Plus and the minus.
Yeah. But I have similar thoughts to you. I obviously, Hyman is the class of this, of our secondary scoring. And yeah, he didn't have a great playoffs, but I don't think that's indicative of his play in general. So he had a great season. He actually was on fire. He was like our empty net specialist. You know, he is creating a really specialized niche for himself on this team. So yeah, like, I'm like, throw the money at him, whatever we got left. when that comes up, give it to him, because
we'll talk about that the next show.
Yes, but, another time. That's for another time. But I agree with you that the disappointments, Kapanen, number one disappointment. I think he's just, I don't know, all I see is stuff about him and his dog. He's just too concerned with his dog. So I think he needs to be more concerned with his play. You gave Janssen, you didn't mark him. I marked him down. I marked him lower because I remember before he got hurt, I was not happy with his play. I didn't really see that he had much of an impact. However, most of that was during the Babcock time. So yeah, it's kind of I kind of give him an out in that I'm kind of interested to see how he is under Keefe for a whole season, because obviously, as evidenced by how Keefe feels about him and how much he trusts him, I could see him, you know, having a much better performance potentially. So, but yes, small sample size with him, but I do recall that I just was like, I was very underwhelmed by him. Bright spots, obviously, Mikheyev, I you know, marked him fairly highly for what he gave before he got hurt. Also Engvall, yes, he did kind of peter out a little bit, but I do think that he's another one that under Keefe for a whole season, it could be interesting to see. And he, I think, is going to carve out a good role for himself on the penalty kill. Somebody like Freddie Gauthier, I kind of thought he started out the season really, really well, really strong. And then kind of, so he was like up, and then I kind of marked him as even. He really, his impact kind of diminished as the season wore on.
I didn't even mention him, so obviously I was like...
So he's forgettable.
Yes.
Obviously, right? Kerfoot, I marked him kind of as a wash, even. And he did what he was supposed to do. So he's third line center. he was pretty versatile. I think that we definitely could get more from him, but he's a good fit for that, for where he needs to play. I did not give Clifford really a grade because I thought that the sample size there, you know, yeah, he did have a bit of an impact, but it's a little bit small sample size for me. Spezza, it kind of tugs at the heartstrings a little bit, that guy, but there's intangibles there that he has to offer. If they don't re-sign him, I would love for him to just retire and become a coach on our team, because honestly, I think he has a lot to give these guys. I loved during the playoffs how he was working with Robertson after their practices and stuff. There's just so much that he could give. And if he can't win the Stanley Cup on the ice, maybe he can still stay in our organization and win one a different way when that does happen.
Well, there is an assistant coach. There is an assistant coach opening. So,
yes. Yeah, I know.
Who knows?
Two of them, actually, because McFarland left and then they let a person go.
That was a video person, though.
Yeah, but that's still an assistant coaching position.
Oh, okay. And then, because I was wondering what they did with that.
Yeah, Dave. But he's not going to be the video guy, that's for sure.
No. But I was wondering what they did with that Dave Hextall. They haven't said anything about him. So I guess he's coming back, I guess. But I don't know. Clifford is, like you were saying, like you couldn't really give him I don't personally think that, what's his name? Sheldon Keefe really likes his style of play or something like that. I don't know. He didn't really use him a lot, like you were saying. So it was
kind of. Well, yeah, but it's like hard to get into a person's head. You can speculate on that, but I don't know if that's really true or not. So,
All right.
But anyways, let's move on to our lovely defense court. This should be interesting.
Oh, God, the defense. Why is it always the defense that's the problem with this team? I don't know. It's going back to, I don't know. Like,
forever.
I was even looking back at some of the defense, like, even from the mid-2000s sort of thing. And I'm like, just look at that, and it just never improves. The names it's just insane. Anyways, I gave them a C.
And when we do have somebody good, we tend to destroy them. So
yes, yeah.
Yeah, no matter what. It's like you just can't win. It's like either they're crap or really crap, or they're good but not good enough for us. Yeah. So then we just basically ride them out of town on a rail. So anyway, go ahead.
But I gave them a C. And as a group, I could have given them worse, but I thought, I don't know. I just thought to myself, that's when I started.
You have empathy.
Well, that's when I started looking back from even when we were, had good teams.
Right.
The defense was shit, basically. Like, or what we thought were, well, they were good teams. We went to like conference finals and we almost made it. And even with Dougie Sarah back then in 93, 94, like the defense wasn't great, but they had that, obviously they had like the will. That was the part with the will and that chemistry that they had with that team. But
that whole team was
it's different.
Nowhere near as talented is this team
for sure.
Close.
And it was a different era and all that, but still the defense always sucked in our opinion, and it still does. And I gave him the C. So Riley looked great in the playoffs. He was like looking fine. If he comes back like that, I'm more than happy with him, but most of the year you felt bad for the guy, because you know that he's like, they're all competitive, but he's extreme. I think he's on a different level that way. And it totally bothered him that he couldn't perform the way he wanted to. So, he had that. It was his ankle. I think it was that because I always get mixed up with him and Muzzin, because him and Muzzin are basically the two keys that are really good defensemen on this team. Those are the only two, in my opinion, that are like Riley, I would say, is like a 1A, and Muzzin is the 1B. But Muzzin, we saw how important he was to the team when he got injured in the playoffs. We probably lost because he was out. We probably would have won if he
it's that close. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Just he has those intangibles, like you were saying about Spezza. He's the same guy sort of thing, right? And he's won a cup, obviously, and he's the only tough defenseman that we have. So those two, I mean, they're at a different level.
And he makes people better, too. He makes people better.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like Justin Hall, well, you definitely saw, like, even during times during the regular season when Muzzin was out, Hall is not the same player like that he is when he is playing with Jake Muzzin, right? That's just a fact that Muzzin drives that pairing, basically. And then Dermott, he's not as bad as Kapanen, let's say, but I just thought that he had that shoulder injury from last year, and I don't know, he's obviously he had the full time to recuperate, and then with the coaching change again, maybe that helped him a little bit, but I just wasn't. He was supposed to jump up and take Jake Gardner's spot, basically, to be like a number three or a number four defenseman, and he did not do that. In my opinion, he did not take that next step, and now he's in this contract year being an RFA. But yeah, I wasn't impressed with him, and then. I'm not going to say anything about Tyson Barrie and Cody Ceci, except for goodbye. and then Martin Marincin, I wish I could say goodbye, but I have a feeling him and his long stick are going to be with us. And then Rasmus Sandin, he showed promise in the 28 games. He played 28 games for us, and he'll probably make the team next season. So he's definitely going to be like a good, again, it's a left-handed defenseman that we have, left shot defenseman, where we're always looking for that right shot defenseman. But anyways, he's definitely going to be a high quality. You can't really say, it's only 28 games that he played, so you can't really say if he's going to be like a 1B or on the second pairing, that sort of thing. But he should be making the club next year, and especially with Keefe being the coach now, he'll get the chance. And then there's Timothy Liljegren. I'm not sure about this guy. I don't know. He played only 11 games. I look back a little bit of history on him again, because he was actually picked him in the first round, 17th overall in the first round, and in 2017. He's only played, so it's three seasons now, I guess. He's only played 11 games with us this year. And from what I read, it said that, like, his offensive skill is supposed to make the fans jump out of their seats. And I thought, I don't even think we rose a hand when we saw him play. While we're like, did we get that excited about him when we saw him play in any of those 11 games? No. But then, I don't know. I don't know what he is yet. I just can't say it. But the fact that he's a first rounder, it's like you don't want to give up on him. I know he's obviously still young. It's a young and it's defense position, so it takes sometimes longer. But I don't know. It's strange. But anyhow, yeah. So that was my mark for the defense. I was a C.
So I was a little bit more pessimistic in this instance than you, but very marginally. I gave them a C-.
Well, at least we all have the same letters.
Right? Yeah.
Most of the time.
I actually marked Riley a little bit lower, but this year he just, I don't know, the games that he was healthy, he just didn't seem like he was as engaged. Like his offense was just, he was just a little bit off. For me, up until when he got hurt. But like it's an unfortunate season for him overall, I think. But like you said, you know, he looked like a little bit more like his old self in the qualifiers. But it's so hard to say for any of the people that, like, even when we were talking about Mikheyev, like, you know, he looked great in the practices and stuff leading up to that. But then when you're actually playing those games at that high level and you've just come off of an injury, like, I think that you're really not where you need to be. And whatever you gained with adrenaline is going to drop off pretty damn quick. And, but Yeah, like I do think that Riley will bounce back. But obviously, if you're comparing, you know, this season for him when he was healthy to the season before, he just really, he didn't kind of have it.
There was no match there. Yeah.
Yeah. And Muzzin, yeah, he was good. But again, I mean, I'd say like I'd like to still see more from him. Justin Hall, I actually kind of marked him fairly high. I thought he took a step this year. Is he like going to be a star for us? No. He did play well and learn from playing with Jake Muzzin this year. But obviously you can see his confidence is not there without him quite the same. But did he take a step this year? Yes, he did. He's not a young guy though. So, you know, he's probably no better than a bottom six guy, really, if you are slotting him where he sort of should be. So he kind of played higher than he should on a good defensive core because we needed him to this year, right? He shouldn't have been like a second pairing guy, technically. Agreed with CeCe. He was horrible at the beginning. He kind of evened out with the end. I actually think Keefe got the most out of him. If you're going to compare the difference between Babs and Keefe, because he sort of was not playing sort of outside of himself as much towards the end. Does that mean he was good? No, but he was hurting us less towards the end of the season, I thought. Barry, yeah, just a bad fit all around. I think a little better under Keefe, but it was just, I don't know. You know what? I think, and I know we're going to get into this later, but he was brought in to appease a certain coach so that they could get a quality right shot person. And that coach went and destroyed this person. So it's kind of both their fault, because really it's like, you're a grown man, so you should be, when you were talking about mental toughness, this is a person who doesn't have it. But overall, it's just like, yeah, let's turn the page on that one. But speaking about Dermott, I 100% agree with you. We obviously expected much more from him in a contract year. You expect a person to take a step. But he is young, so maybe they float out a 1-year deal for him, or, you know, even just like a bridge, something that fits within our scheme, because I think that's best case scenario for him, because it's not like he didn't light it up where it's going to entice other people to really be wanting to give him more. I don't really see people offer sheeting for this person.
No.
You know, this year. Yeah. And Marinson, again, I think he's kind of, they have him here in sort of a specialist role for that long stick of his.
Depth player.
He's a depth guy.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, but I did put Liljegren in with Sandin as promising, but you're right. I do agree that Liljegren's going to have to start showing something soon, because otherwise, but not everyone is going to develop as quickly. Like Sandin has an above average hockey IQ and maturity level for somebody his age. Liljegren, maybe he's not quite there yet, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be. And I did look also at the draft year where he was picked, and there's really not a lot.
No, there wasn't.
To pick through.
Yeah.
And they are always trying to, you know, meet the needs of the defense. So
yeah.
Anyway, he was that year. I remember he was quite highly touted.
Oh yeah,
he did have an injury which dropped him down so that we could take him. But there was some people that were thinking he would go much closer to the top. So
I know.
So yeah. You know, it's just a question of, can he make that step to turn that potential into something more tangible? So. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're close there. Let's go on to the goalie. Mm-hmm. This one was tough, boy. I don't know. I've been listening. listening to too much on the radio and TV analysts. Okay, I gave them a B. just a straight B for Freddie and Jack Campbell.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know. Freddie, I'm worried about him actually going into this contract year. He wasn't great, obviously, during the regular season, but to me, the team in front of him wasn't great either. Like, so, I mean, sometimes, but I know it was actually his worst season for the save percentage. Like, that's, like, he just had an off year that way, but I still never, each game during the regular season, I never actually said, oh yeah, that was definitely Frederik Andersen's fault that we lost that game. I could never say that. So, and I don't know who would be better, considering the type of team we have, who would be better to have. I don't have that answer. So
I do. Cujo. Oh, wait. No, that can't happen anymore. Yeah. So therefore, no, there is nobody.
Yeah. And I mean, it's up to him, obviously, to be, like, he always has that slow start, like the way they always say, sort of thing. So, and obviously in the playoffs, not getting it done for us, let's say, in big games. And so it's those are the things I think that why I gave them the B as well, is because he doesn't, I guess it's the same story every year that way. And it's like, he should be able to improve on at least one of those things, sort of thing, right? Whether it be starting off better or getting us through the playoffs and getting us that win. I just think that those are the two things that he needs to work on. But I still can't say that he's the reason why we are where we are, sort of thing. Like, he, to me, has played phenomenal, regardless of the regular season. May have been up and down for him, but the whole team was up and down. So, and I do worry about him, how it's going to affect the team as a whole. Like, if they do trade him, I think he's a pretty big piece that way of the leadership in that room. He's and just him going into the contract year, I think it's, I don't know, his mindset. I'm worried about that somehow. Like, I just hope it doesn't affect him, sort of, like, and his play, and because obviously people are going to be asking, the media especially here, he knows that. And then Jack Campbell, I mean, what's not to love about Campbell soup? He obviously just, it would have been nice if Dubas got this guy a little bit earlier in the season, instead of letting Hutchison mess us up. But anyways, he played well. He showed excitement that he joined an original six team. He's from Michigan, so he obviously is close to here, so he knows what it seems to know anyways, that what it means to be a Leaf. But he only played six games, right? So you can't really give much of a mark, but he seems to be a team guy, and he doesn't have to sit behind the bench, and he's lucky enough that he didn't have to sit behind the bench and do the what Babcock used to have the goalies do to keep them in the game, to take the number of shots or whatever it was. He didn't have to do that. So, I think it was a good move to get him. And I think he's under contract for another 2 years. So it was a good move to get him, but it was a bit too late on the part of Kyle Dubas there, I think, like, for this season anyways.
Well, you say that like he has the choice and he can just make the deal whenever he damn well wants.
Of course, because we're fans.
Yeah. So it's possibly that he could only make this deal when it arose. But anyway, I actually gave them a C+, but that's because I included Hutchison in that, because I gave Hutchison a D. So he brought the mark way, way down. Oh, okay. So I 100% agree with you. Freddie, I marked him like pretty much a B+, because he was just slightly below his normal average. And Who's to know that if the season continued on, if he wouldn't have ended up at his average.
Mm, yeah.
But I agree with you 100% that at some point you want to have a year where you're above your average.
Yeah.
And he really doesn't often do that. So most of the time, like, his numbers, like, all line up exactly the same every year. And we need one of those outlier years from him. Whether that means, like you said, coming out and starting stronger, And that maybe they need to work on his head a little bit more. In fact, like, I kind of feel like, you know, a lot of attention was made with the amount of time they work on their skills, even in the summertime and stuff with special coaches and everything. To me, maybe this summer, especially having it be COVID, it's a good time to get them working on their minds. So yeah, they need to all be spending time on their heads more than their bodies.
I think with him, it'll be good to go back to Denmark to be with his family, because he was basically hanging out with Austin Matthews in Arizona the whole time, and that's it. So,
well, and the thing is, that's the other thing, is that this is a very odd year. We don't know how, you know, being away from people that you normally would be able to have contact with whenever you want. You know, that is taken away from you. Like, even though you can talk to them, deep down, you know that if you really wanted to go to them, you can't, it's hard to do. So look at like this whole Tuukka Rask situation, you know, like it's not normal, not regular. And we don't know how these things affect these players, and they're human beings too. So, and same, I agree with you with Jack Campbell. Again, but I say short sample size, but I mean, the guy's a positive influence. He's the perfect guy to be a backup, and he's supportive. And yeah, like, there's nothing really bad you could say about him. He performed in the games that he got in. So yeah. I have no complaints there. Obviously, Hutchison was, what can you say about that? That was just a disaster.
So those are two players I didn't mention. I didn't mention Freddie Gauthier and what's his name? Michael Hutchison. Dave Hutchison was an alumni. Anyways.
But you know what? Again, like, I have to say that, you know, you cannot look at the season and forget about Babcock. I mean, that is such a huge, huge piece. And how everything started off, and he, by the way he handled, like, who's to say too that if we had Hutchison and Keith started the year, if he would have been as bad, because Keith would have used him differently and maybe put him in spots where he would excel instead of, you know, sticking to his, this is what I do with my backup goalies bullshit that Babcock does. So he kind of destroyed this guy.
Yeah.
Which is horrible. So anyway.
Anyways.
Now on to the fireworks. Okay, let's go.
All right. So Sheldon Keefe. We're starting with Sheldon Keefe.
You start with Sheldon? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're not, I didn't mark Babcock because he's gone, obviously. Mark him. So Sheldon Keefe, I gave him a B. It was interesting, actually. The change needed to happen, and it was good to start, but then after a while, it started to grow a bit. I was growing tired of that whole having the loud music in the rink and the guys having a, like, being loosey-goosey and having the skills coaches and the four dividing them up into, I don't know, they had one group over in one pad, another group in another pad. It just seemed like a lot of fun in after a while, but then that kind of changed because the team, like, they started off well, obviously, and then the team wasn't great. Let's say, I think it was like in end of January, early February, it was like the up and down season. But I like that he liked to try different things with his line combinations. Definitely, he wasn't set in his ways like the way Babcock was. Players seemed to like him and look forward, and they're definitely looking forward to like a full season of him being the coach. And he and Dubas obviously have the strong relationship going back to, like, they're both from the Sioux Greyhounds. And I didn't realize, I think maybe it's been a while, obviously, that I've heard this, but Dubas hired Keefe as the coach there mid-season in the Sioux. So it was almost the exact same predicament here, sort of. So, and then Keefe got hired to be the Marlies head coach too. So, by Dubas. So they're following each other along. So these two are basically tied together. Depending on what happens with this team moving forward, like, really those two are tied together with everything that their vision for this team. And Yeah, he'll get the chance. I didn't mind him. He was okay. I mean, it's hard. It was from December that he took, or late November that he took on, but the job. But I just liked his, I liked the fact that he was trying the different things. And you could see his frustration, though. It was almost like he had the same frustration in a different way, though, as Babcock with the team when they, with the defensive part of the game. And later on, as he, like going into February and March, he was getting a little bit, I think, pissed off. But yeah, so I gave him a B.
Okay, so I actually gave him an A.
Okay.
And the reason being is that I think that that immediate impact was significant. His willingness to make adjustments. You know, he did kind of gamble in the playoffs and it didn't kind of work out, but I like that he's willing to do that. I just think that he, you know, given what he had to work with, you know, no training camp to start with when he came in, short kind of weird sort of training camp right before the playoffs. He basically had 3 months, and just as he would have potentially was starting to make adjustments, moving our team in the right direction, the season stopped. So there's like about a good 6 to 8 weeks there where, you know, we weren't able to get what he would have done,
yeah,
you know, going forward. But I like that he is a thinker, and the different biggest difference I see between him and Babcock is Babcock has his structure, the way he thinks things should be, and he tries to fit everything into that. Whereas this guy is like, okay, if I'm not getting X out of this player or this area or this line, he's willing to think about how to do things differently so that he can get the most out of those players' strengths. So I think that that is going to bode well for us with a full season under him. So maybe my A is a little bit on his potential, and it is a smaller sample size, and he's unproven 100%. He's never coached in this league. But I don't know. There's something about the way he looks behind the bench, the look on his face, that he is filing stuff all the time. Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of think that he's got a fire. You want somebody with a fire in him. He has a fire.
Yeah.
For sure.
And he'll get to hire. Yeah, he'll get to hire his own assistant coach now too. So I don't know if it'll be both or just the one. So that'll be good too.
That's a key. One thing, I mean, they're talking about Bruce Boudreau coming in. I personally, as much as I really like Bruce Boudreau, and it would be, I mean, a dream for him to be behind the Leaf bench, the guy wants to be a head coach. I don't really like the dynamic of bringing in somebody like Keefe, who's a young coach, first time coach, and before he even starts, kind of putting almost a lame duck label on him by having somebody who could step in if he missteps. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just puts him in the situation. I'm not saying that that's what would happen, but that puts him in the situation where there's a lot of people rooting for Boudreau, and people tend to get on guys pretty quickly in this town. I don't know. I just see that doesn't set him up for success potentially. So I don't know if would like that. Anyways, so
we'll get into the assistant coach. Maybe by the next podcast, they'll have
more information by then.
Yeah. So moving on to the GM, the general manager, Kyle Dubas.
I know for sure that we're not going to be close.
Okay. So I gave him, you're thinking that I gave him an F, but I didn't go that bad. But I gave him a C. I gave him a C minus. Mm-hmm. So he's only in his second year. That's fine. I was GM. And so let's just say this upcoming offseason is going to be huge for him. Like, I like on how the team performs going into next season is going to be huge. He definitely lost in the Kadri deal. I actually didn't believe this, but the team has been worse in points for two seasons he has been GM. So that isn't good when you're not that much worse, but still he's lower. I guess last season they had 100 points, and this season, in 70 games, he was at 81 points. So he wouldn't have been that off. And then I guess, yeah, if they had completed the 82 games, most likely he wouldn't have been that much off the 100 points, but still. And then just the whole Marner contract situation, the way he handled that. And that's why we said it before, I think, like when it came to these three young guys, that Lou should have been left there to sign them. But I just don't think that he was able to, whether it be Marner or Nylander, like to get one of those guys to go get them signed at a lower number so that we could have some flexibility in the cap. And then the whole backup goalie for this particular regular season, the whole backup goalie situation, I think was horrible. And just in terms of that Kadri deal, it was interesting. He said in his, I picked out something. She still is laughing, right? Because in that press conference, though, at the end of the year, it was a load of shit, in my opinion. He said that he always blames himself, right? Which is fine. That I tend to do that sometimes as well. But he said that when it came to, mostly, I think, when it came to Tyson Barrie, that he needed to help him more, I guess, to be in a market like Toronto, like to help him more with that part of it. And he thinks that would have helped if he helped the player to perform better with our team. And I don't know, to me, that's a load of crap. The guy should just, I don't know if there's a way to say it, but he should have just said, you know what, it didn't work out, that deal sort of thing. But yeah, I give him a C-. I'm waiting to see what he does in this upcoming offseason, but I don't, when it comes to trading players, I don't have a lot of confidence in him right now. I just don't right now. So what was your mark?
Well, I think that's hilarious because you're basing that on one trade. But anyway, my mark was a B-. As you said, he's in year two. And the issue with that is he's in year two, but he inherited problems. Problems that are not just from the previous regime. Problems that were from the regime even prior to that. So there are cap constraints, people's money on our situation, all of that was created by other people. So that's that. That's one thing. So a regression potentially in our points is partly due to that. So he is reworking our team more in line with what he wants. That trade that you so lovingly like to refer to constantly is actually the thing that the person to blame for that is Mike Babcock, in my opinion, because guess who was whining, complaining about not having right-handed shot D depth on our team? Him. And I honestly think that if Babcock wasn't the coach going into the season, that trade might not have happened at all. And who's to know? I mean, like, we're looking at Naz, the way he's playing right now. He's lighting everything on fire. You know, the one thing that if you want to blame Dubas on is getting then John Tavares. Because once they got JT, that put Naz in the third center role. And he's not a third line center. And that's evidenced by how he's playing now. So the fact that it's the minute he got moved from that second line to the third line, everything started dropped off for him. He wasn't getting the minutes that he's accustomed to or that he needs to be getting. And I honestly think that during the playoffs, when he basically came storming out, he wanted to make the most use of this limited time that he has, which made him a little overzealous. mind you, part of that is the microscope is always on Toronto, because I've seen tons of hits in these so-called playoffs now where if it was Nass who did that on our team, they would have been basically suspended on. So there's so many variables involved in this.
Yeah.
And there is not a single analyst who at that time said that that trade was a bad deal for us. Nobody. Not one. You can't say it was a bad deal. It was not a bad trade at all. Did it work out on our side? No. But you know who it did work out for? Nass. So you could actually look at it that and say that maybe for his career, it's better that he left.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't going to get that shot here. It wasn't going to be the same for him here, especially not under Babcock when he first started.
Yeah. But I just think, too, that when they were looking for this right shot D, and they have all that analytics team, obviously it's Dubas has numbers that he's looking at. He's not just going out and throwing away players sort of thing, in the trades. But when you're looking at the analytics and that, they say, and I'm not at all an analytics person, but they say that you can see better to say, is that player going to be a fit on our team? And maybe those analytics people behind underneath Dubas and MLSE didn't do their job then.
I was going to say that, he also has under him is scouts. Yeah. And it's the scout's job to basically
see
he's
if they're
going
a fit,
on that because he can't see every single person. And they're the ones that are supposed to know if this guy is going to be a good fit or a bad fit here. Now, I still think that he was a bad fit under the Babcock coached Leafs. And for better, for worse, there's two things at play here. So his mental makeup was not right for that dynamic. Would it have been the same under Keefe? Maybe not. But I mean, damage done.
There's so many
variables. It's just too hard to basically put the label and put it all on Dubas that, he did something wrong there. Because I will throw myself in front of a bus and say that there's no way that that was the wrong thing to do at the time. I mean, did it work out for us? No, but there's a lot of things that didn't work out for us at the start of the season. So if anything, I know we're going to get into the next part of it and this leading into that, I think it's partly Shanahan's fault.
Yes.
Then.
Yes. Which brings us to Brendan Shanahan. And I gave him a D for the Shanahan plan.
Wow. Okay.
So he's the lowest one of the group because basically you're talking all about Babcock quite a bit in this, and I think it's his fault that he didn't give Dubas basically the go-ahead to get rid of him last summer or after the playoffs last summer. He should have let, he had the control, no doubt. I'm still positive that everything goes through him when maybe, I don't know about the Nas trade or whatever, but when it comes to, I think when it comes to trading big name players, everything's going to go through Shanahan. He didn't. And basically that it ended up being a spiral effect, and Babcock eventually got fired. But as we all know, but I mean, he was hired in April 2014, and this was his fifth season with the Shanahan plan, as everybody loves to call it. And we haven't got past the first round of the playoffs. And I just don't. I mean, I still believe in his Shanahan plan and just him being wanting to get this team to the next level. But it's five seasons now and he hasn't done it. He dismantled the team in 2015-16. And then we got the first round pick the first pick overall with Austin Matthews. And then ever since then, it's been kind of, I don't know. There hasn't been that improvement to actually, it's now going, what is it, 16 years now? We haven't got past the first round, I think. Yeah. right? Even he said it himself, 50, and it's 53 years for the Stanley Cup. So for me, I gave him a D. What did you give him?
So actually, I marked him higher, but you know, you convinced me, so I'm changing my mark to a C. Because I agree with you. I actually think that some of the things that set us off on a bad start this year have to do with him. And I, as far as the firing Babcock thing, I don't know that that would have been totally just up to him. But I do think that that, I do believe that at the end of last season, Dubas wanted to fire Babcock. And if they would just would have let him.
They didn't see eye to eye. You knew that. You could see
yes,
that.
Yes, 100%.
And that was something the same philosophy. Yeah,
exactly. And so that was an issue. And I know that they wanted to try it out or whatever. But the other thing is, I wonder if Larry Tannenbaum also had something to do with the fact that they wouldn't allow that. Because I know that Larry Tannenbaum and Babcock actually had a pretty close relationship. So the real problem was that somehow Babcock, he was elevated to this pedestal. He kind of was pseudo management in a way. He had privilege that other GMs in this league are not given. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to being with management, and he had the arrogance of that, which became a problem. So 100% that's on Shanahan for that part of it. The other part of it is you mentioned before, you know, about having Lou sign some of these young guys. Well, the truth of the matter is that part of the reason the Nylander thing became an issue, which started the spiral, is because Lou wouldn't sign him sooner. So if he would have done his job, Lou Lamoriello, and signed him, you know, instead of doing his Lou thing and waiting till the 11th hour and doing the ninja mind or Jedi mind trick on
Lou
him
is,
and getting...
Lou is gone. Oh, you mean in his RFA the year before, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was a mistake by Lamoriello that ended up falling on a rookie GM's lap. So that I don't 100% blame Dubas on, but the way all that rolled out with Lou, as far as, you know, there's question as to whether Lou Lamoriello knew that he was going to, you know, be, because he signed him for 3 years, but I think Lou really thought he was going to be staying. But it seems to me that, you know, Shanahan maybe wasn't very clear with him. So the handling of that situation, I don't know if that's, you know, if there was a lot of clarity there. So there's some missteps here by Shanahan for sure, which did impact, you know, what ended up rolling out and, you know, what his rookie GM had. You know, if you're the person who wants to set people up for success, maybe he didn't do the best he could do to set Dubas up for success rolling this out. But that being said, I still think that now that they're all on the same page, this is basically, this season is the first season that they're all on the same page. So I'm with you that this is the year where they need to make some inroads and something positive has to come out of it.
And it's going to be tough because it's COVID time, right? Still, sir.
Yeah, so it's still not going to be a regular season.
It's a little bit awkward situation for them moving forward, but that's why they get paid the big bucks, right? That's why we pay them the big bucks, and they gotta get through it. But all right, so we're done with our marking system. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed all that information. And so basically you can say, take from that Scylla is more optimistic and I'm more pessimistic, I guess. But we're almost in line on most things. Yeah. So let's just,
My cup is just slightly more full than yours.
Yes. That's all. So let's just do a review of the important dates. Do you want to give them just moving forward?
Yeah. So, basically, stuff coming up that to pay attention to. Obviously, I know we're all still enjoying watching hockey. I know that, you know, Leaf fans, most of us are hockey fans too, so I'm sure we're all still watching. But important dates coming up that will impact our Leafs is October 9th to 10th is the 2020 NHL draft. We do not have a pick in the first round due to Carolina picking up Marlowe to deal with his dollars. So now they're going to be getting our first rounder, and we will start picking in the second round. After that, November 1st, NHL free agency will be open. So that should be interesting. I don't know. Like, this is just such a bizarre time. So
I don't know what's going to happen.
Who knows? And there's going to be so many issues with a lot of team and the cap situation. So we probably will on a future podcast talk a little bit about those situations. November 17th is going to be the opening of training camp for the 2021 season, tentatively, assuming there's no other, you know, second waves or things that shut things down. And December 1st, we could be enjoying the opening of the 2021 regular season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all that is subject to change, but it's things to, that's basically right now where the NHL is at. So, yeah, so we'll be back, since the playoffs are over, we'll be back in our normal spot for release dates. We're going to start doing this again monthly, which is the first Wednesday of the month. So next time you'll hear from us will be on the 2nd of September, and it'll be our first anniversary episode. Woohoo! And so you'll want to tune in for that to hear the winner of our first anniversary contest, and as always, we'll have Leaf Talk. Plenty of, there'll be something to talk about then. There always is. Yeah. So you want to give them the details?
So just to remind you of the contest, we're going to keep giving you some chances to enter on our social media channels. So you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at LTL1917. To enter the contest, we would like you to follow us on Instagram, like the anniversary post, and tag two friends. And that's it. And that's all you have to do to have a chance to win a $50 e-gift card of your choice. So I guess that's all we have for today. We hope that you enjoyed our little bit of a grading. Of course, we always, always like to hear from you and hear your feedback. And maybe you don't agree with us. So if you don't agree with us, you know, we obviously would like to hear that too. But for now, that's all we have.
Talk to you next time.
Bye.